When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is the start of yet another week in the strange and confusing world of public health, ladies and gentlemen. While Boris Johnson prepares to make yet another series of declarations to the country this very afternoon, I'm still reeling from the behaviour of the Department of Health and Social Care over the weekend, following an amazing article in the Daily Mail on Saturday, which laid bare the truth about government statistics on hospital beds, death rates and predictions of disaster. They actually issued a tweet which declared the Mail facts to be misleading. Let's just run that one by you again. The facts were actually misleading. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. and Mrs. Department of Health, but actually, you cannot mislead when you publish facts. That would be the job of the government. Following an outpouring of questions, disagreements and doubts from, amongst others, me, they then deleted the tweet without any kind of explanation, without any kind of reference and without any form of context. Are we to assume now then that the Mail article was not misleading and therefore true? If so, fatalities from COVID-19 are barely any higher than deaths over the past 5 years. If so, the predictions of rising deaths are also wrong. And if so, the hospital beds are actually less occupied than they were same time last year. So, the question remains, what exactly is going on? We'll ask consultant Dr. Waqar Rashid what he makes of it all, but I will welcome any views that you may have, of course, as well. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll be having another conversation with Mail on Sunday columnist Peter Hitchens, because he will want to talk very much, I'm sure, about the state we are in, the staggering statistics of doom, and the interference of Facebook in the publication by Michael Yeadon of an interview he did with Unlocked about the perils of getting coronavirus wrong. Plus, we'll be bringing you the latest from the Worcestershire shop owner who's battling her local council and now the police to stay open despite orders to close down. We published a video, or rather I published a video over the course of the weekend, which has now been seen by 150,000 people. It's pinned to the top of my Twitter account. I'm going to be putting it out again during the course of this show, and I would urge everyone to watch it. 0344 499 1000. And as if you weren't losing enough faith in this Tory government, we will bring you the horrifying and rather unedifying spectacle of billions of pounds of waste going out of the Treasury and into the hands of public sector employees in the form of perks and ridiculous projects. It is truly something to behold. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the entire planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, this is the statement that we have received from the Department of Health and Social Care about why they decided it was a good idea to remove a tweet, to delete, indeed, a tweet in which they alleged that an article in the Daily Mail was misleading. Now, the article in the Daily Mail carried, as Julia Hartley Brewer told you earlier, official statistics on occupying the occupancy of beds in hospitals in this country, the number of people dying from COVID in this country, the projected numbers of people dying from COVID and how those numbers had been entirely and utterly wrong. They said this: it is inaccurate to suggest any data has been deliberately misrepresented. During the presentation of data, it was clearly explained what the slides did and did not show. The projections cited were based on what would happen if no further restrictions were put in place and did not take into account the robust action the government has taken to save lives since then. It is vital that people follow the rules and stay at home while the national restrictions are in place, so we can bring the transmission rates back down and get back to normality as soon as possible. Really? Really? That is probably the worst government statement I've ever seen in the history of government statements. An absolute load of old cobblers. So we have asked them once more, at the Department of Health and Social Care. Why did you delete the tweet? And if you did delete the tweet, does that mean that these statistics are not misleading, therefore they are true? Could we please have a yes or no answer to that? Preferably before this show finishes at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much indeed. Let us talk now to Dr. Waqar Rashid, consultant neurologist and MS specialist, of course, because he, like me, has always been slightly sceptical of the way that some of this data is being used. Dr. Waqar, very good morning to you.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. I'm afraid I'm not very impressed, however, with the Department of Health and Social Care.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, wasn't it?
Isn't it?
I think we've seen in the months running up to now some more subtle sort of, how shall I put this, trying to restrict voices from whether it be YouTube, Google, or just different ways in which, in a more subtle manner, there's been some restriction of getting alternative narratives out. I noticed on, as you know, I've written some articles for The Spectator, which have been, you know, I think pretty mainstream,
yeah.
Being sceptical, but not being desperately controversial or anything. And I noticed that on trying to retweet, you would get a message on Twitter saying, do you really want to do this? And
yeah.
You read the article first. So it's one of those subtle ways, but this is pretty much out in the open, isn't it, in terms of the actual pushback. And to a major daily newspaper in the Daily Mail to say, to accuse it of misleading its readers without actually offering any example of how they supposedly misled their readers by publishing this article, and then obviously backtracking now by deleting it. But,
yeah.
You know, as has been the case in a number of things, when they're wrong, they don't say they're wrong. They just double down on it and say, this is very serious. You must follow the rules because we're trying to protect people's lives.
Well, I mean, my particular tweet to them was all about which parts of the so-called misleading article were wrong. You know, for example, were the graphs which showed that the beds are actually less full now than they were same time last year, is that wrong? Clearly it's not. It's their own figure. You know, is it true that fatalities are the same, if not barely any higher than they were for the past 5 years? Again, their figures, not mine, so therefore those are not wrong. Is it wrong to suggest that their predictions have turned out to be wildly inaccurate? No. None of that stuff is wrong, but they won't address any of that. All they will say is that the data has not been misrepresented. Well, I would differ from them on that because, first of all, we know that Valance and Witty have both produced various pieces of information where they have neglected to show, shall we say, if we're being generous, other pieces of data which would show quite clearly that we are not in such a bad place as we were in March and April.
I think, absolutely. I think what we've seen is a real reluctance for them to have an open debate on this, whether that be the various people in SAGE and with Professor Witty and Valance, and or whether that be in terms of the Department of Health itself with the messaging that it's used. So you see very much an absolute monotone sort of messaging coming out from the major sort of broadcast media. And obviously, when they've proved, when it's been shown that their modelling has been inaccurate, they've not come back and said that they've just doubled down, or they've said, as you read in that statement, that, well, it's you know, they've kind of tried to imply it's because of the measures that they've taken. That's why. And so you get these sort of quite ridiculous sort of, I can't remember the wording that Professor Valance used now, but it wasn't a prediction. It was something else, which is completely, you know, if it was going to be...
It was a scenario, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it would have meant, you know, that all of us in the country twice over would have ended up getting coronavirus if it continued in that manner. It was just nonsensical.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a point, actually, and I wrote about this, and just speaking to, you know, fellow colleagues who I work with, and I know that a lot of confidence, I think, was lost with them because, you know, we have been, as a medical profession, as you know, very supportive of this as a very serious threat to us in terms of COVID and the pandemic, and very serious threat to a lot of people in terms of their health. And we tried to obviously work with whoever tried to engage with us to support them. But this was really a misrepresentation, I think, of the information, or trying to portray a picture in a very, not so subtle way, I have to say, which was just there to spread fear, really. No other way to put it. And it was unnecessary. And similarly, the tweets which the Department of Health sent, it's unnecessary to do that. But they obviously feel that they can't be challenged, because if they're challenged, then their narrative falls down. And so this absence of debate, I think, represents a sort of a weakness, really.
Well, it does. But also, more dangerous than the just the kind of the theory of what they're doing is the fact that they're basing their public policy, and specifically their lockdown policy, and yet again, we're going to be facing more of that this afternoon when we hear from Boris Johnson. You know, they're basing all of that on this data. And so if the data they're using is in fact not correct, or not being correctly used, shall we say, or not being changed, or their policy isn't changing once they see the reality, then what's the point of it?
Quite. I think I saw a report, I think it was sort of middle of last week, that had the modelling that had been presented to the Prime Minister just prior to lockdown come to pass. At this moment, we would be seeing Macmillan Hospitals full. And obviously they're unused still. And so they're very clearly, in this modelling, got some of the parameters they put into the model wrong. And I think there was an expectation of a repeat of spring and this sort of rapid rise in infections, and that has not come to pass, thankfully. And there's various reasons for that. I think, there's a lot more immunity out there than they bargained for and they've modelled for. And I think also the sort of the softer and more understandable measures that we all agree with and follow with in terms of hygiene, and if you've got symptoms, then not to give it to other people, are being followed and are helpful. And it's all this other stuff on top, and then this paranoia and fear that they're spreading, it just loses trust. And so now people are just getting fed up, and this is a time when you don't want that to happen. You want to be working with people and engaging and having trust with people.
Well, that's the problem, because now everyone practically that I speak to has completely lost faith in any government statements about anything at all, because what we're being told constantly, which is true, turns out not to be true. It turns out to be a projection of some kind, turns out to be a model of some kind, turns out not to be scientifically based at all. And the modelling that they're using, I mean, Steve Baker MP was on with Julie Hartley Brewer this morning, and he said they've got to stop using whatever this system of modelling is that they're using. They have to change it because it's clearly inaccurate.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of that. I didn't see it all. I think he's right. I think there's two issues as far as I can see. Firstly, is and I think the tone was set probably going back to sort of February time, is you have a group of scientific advisors who really have run the show in a large part, much more than really expert advisors should be doing. And I think that's because there was a lack of, and it's hard and it's a very complex issue, but there was a lack of suitable expertise within the Department of Health itself. And so they, I think, deferred too much with too unquestioning to this group of expert advisors. And I think that when it started to dawn on them that actually mistakes being made, so whether that be in the initial modelling, whether that be in the care home outbreaks that occurred, whether that be the far too slow reduction of restrictions once we passed the peak in May, there was virtually no COVID infections at all in the summer, and yet we were still being restricted. It's quite extraordinary, really. And then the slow response as infections started to pick up again, as schools went back, universities went back, and the season changed. But they've seen all this in the Department of Health, but they've not gone back, it seems to me anyway, to the expert advisors, said, hang on a minute, you're getting this wrong. And they've kind of dipped their toe into getting one or two other opinions, but they haven't been strong enough to say to these expert advisors, I think you're wrong on this. You were wrong here. You're wrong there. Justify this, because it's just been, it seems to me, far too unquestioning the acceptance of their advice.
Well, it does. Because also, I mean, they would have far more, I think, credibility, the government, if they said, look, you know, we did make these predictions. We did think that this could happen. Luckily, because of what we have done, and they could even take credit for it if they wanted to, it now would appear, for example, that we don't need to keep lockdown until December the 2nd. We may be able to now open gyms, for example, on Friday, rather than waiting until December the 2nd or December the 3rd. And I think people would really go along with that, and they would feel as though there was some form of kind of flexibility going on within the government. Because don't forget, they're now selling us this vaccine idea where we're going to have all these different vaccines coming at us. It's going to be like, you know, kids in a candy store time. Which one would you like? You know, you get to take your pick of, you know, three or four different ones. Some of them are 70% accurate. Some of them are 90% accurate. I don't think anyone really knows what that means.
Yeah, I agree. I think... To your first point, yeah, I saw the reports that they're going to let outdoor recreational sports start again, but from December the 2nd. Well, why are you waiting?
Yeah,
you know this is safe. You know many children get a huge amount of pleasure. Many adults get pleasure watching their children do this. Why are you waiting? You know, what possible reason do you have? And isn't it interesting as well, if we wind back a week or two to when the lockdown first started, and you've got, again, this endless stream of professors coming on saying, well, we may have to extend it further than December 2, you know. And unfortunately, well, fortunately for all of us, but perhaps unfortunately for the modelling, is that what's been very clear is actually the infection cases have dropped, and they were dropping actually before, certainly stabilising and on the way down.
And that should be a good thing. They should be celebrating that,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And so it becomes, so we've not heard much of this in the last few days, of this extending lockdown beyond December the 2nd now, because it's completely nonsensical. That, you know, the figures just do not bear this out. And, you know, there should be this sort of, I think, don't want to overplay, but just say, well, look, hang on a minute. Modelling isn't everything. Let's just pause a bit. Let's just actually be a bit more measured in how we do this instead of being forced into measures. I mean, 4 weeks. Why 4 weeks of a lockdown? You know, why not just say, well, look, okay, we've been told we may be getting overwhelmed. We're going to lock down for, you know, a short period of time and observe and see. And it's abundantly clear, had we done that instead of committing to 4 weeks, we would now be saying, actually, things look much more reassuring now. We can come out of lockdown.
Yes. And also, would they mind, please, actually looking at the proper statistical information rather than at what they think might happen if something else happens, which would make it very, very easy and much more plausible to open up all manner of things. You know, if you can get on a plane, if you can get in a train, you know, why can't you go to the pub? Why can't you open up restaurants? Why can you not have shops open so that people can do their Christmas shopping? And I mean, I was driving back up to London from Sussex yesterday. Steady stream of traffic. Nothing particularly terrible compared to what it's like during the week. But, you know, this ludicrous sign suddenly appeared on the A2, which said, stay home, essential travel only. I burst out laughing because literally nobody is paying any attention to it.
Yeah, I've been going to work and the roads are very busy. And just generally, I think the thing that's people are trying to get on with their normal lives, but it's the businesses that have been destroyed in the process, which is just so sad. And, you know, it's just, it's unnecessary. We saw, and you know, going back to your point, we could let them take credit for this. So if we saw a stabilization happening from really mid to late October in terms of cases, so you could give government credit and say, well, maybe the tier system was doing something. I'm not so sure. I think it probably would have happened anyway, but great. You know, it's good that we were seeing the stabilization. And then why, on the basis of this sort of, you know, this modeling, which you know, has obviously not come to pass. And the funny, you know, the extraordinary thing was that even as Boris Johnson was delivering his speech, it was clear that the modelling wasn't coming to pass. It was on the data that was being presented, which is over a week old, I recall. it was clear that the figures that should be being projected were not coming to pass even then, and that they still went along and went ahead with it. It was just quite extraordinary.
Right. I mean, at what point did modelling become such a sort of epic part of science? Because, I mean, you're a neurologist, you work in the area of MS. I mean, I presume not everyone uses these models in order to predict what the flow of patients is likely to be, or you know, what the rate of, say, for example, infection in any given neurology areas is. I mean, does everybody use these models, or is it just epidemiologists working for the government?
I'll give you an example. So so-called mad cow disease, so new variant CJD. So this was early in my career as a neurologist. It's a neurological disorder, all kinds of projections, including one from Professor Ferguson. Massive confidence intervals, which tell you, so that means the range was massive, going from a few hundred to hundreds of thousands. So that's telling you the modeling is not going to be accurate. They don't know. And it was so dependent on lots of different things. And as I say, with modeling, if you put in inaccurate parameters, it goes wrong. I've done a lot of, when I was doing my research, looking at MRI modeling of MS, and you know, you clicked a different button on the modeling software, you got a different answer. So, you know, it is all based on your current set of knowledge and the parameters you put in, and you've got to then update your knowledge when that knowledge changes, and I think the knowledge has changed, and then you've got to then, I think, be honest with people and say, well, actually, and I think there should be, if SAGE and the Department of Health had anything about them in terms of where we are now, I think, you know, whether it be today or at some press conference, they ought to come back and say, look, we said in a worst case scenario, this could happen. Thankfully, this happened. Mm. Thank you so much for following the guidelines and behaving responsibly, because we are not in as bad a state as we are. We can start to, you know, we obviously stay vigilant. We stay, you know, respectful, but we don't need to go to the lengths that were being bandied around about, you know, lockdowns lasting till Christmas, and you know, now they're here at 25 days of lockdown because you can have 5 days of freedom Christmas. This is really not scientific stuff, and you know, I think it needs to stop, because it's just eroding more and more trust, and this is going to be bad for all of us, I think, in healthcare long term.
Well, you would think that after that experience of Neil Ferguson and his hopelessly wrong and useless model, that maybe the government would have considered either one, ditching him, and or ditching the system. But instead of that, they didn't ditch either of them, and instead employed them for further kind of nonsense for decades.
It's certain sections of the media.
Well, he still gets interviewed regularly on the BBC, on Neil Ferguson. I mean, he's like a joke character now.
No matter how often you're wrong, you still seem to be able to get invited on. It's quite extraordinary. It's obviously. I think the other thing, actually, the other wider point you made is that I think there are people still there, still out there, because, and I don't blame them. It's because of the information they receive, who still feel that actually, because of the action taken, we've averted these models, and actually, the modelling was accurate, and it's because of what's been done that it's that it's not happened. And
just before we go then, Dr. Waqar Rashid, let us recap on what the government has done. As a result of all of these lockdowns that they've put into place, and the tiers 1, 2, and 3, we have managed to retain the same death rates as we did last year. We've managed to have fewer hospital beds occupied than there were last year. We've managed to accrue a huge waiting list of people who haven't been able to get any access to healthcare because of this shutdown. We've managed to ruin a whole bunch of businesses. And we've ended up actually with a pandemic which hasn't really affected much of the population in any kind of meaningful way. So that's pretty much it, right?
Well, one thing you've forgotten there is we've got an increased number of people dying at home for non-COVID reasons.
Yes.
Well, and which is such a big concern.
I was trying I was trying to make it look rosy, you know.
I mean, no one in SAGE seems to be concerned by this. It is such a big problem. Yeah. Approximately 100 people a day dying, excess deaths at home.
And if that was the only thing that they were causing to be a problem, that would be bad enough. But it's a whole lot worse than that. But listen, Dr. Waqar Rashid, thank you very much indeed. Neurologist, MS specialist, man who talks absolute sense. What is going on in the Department of Health? I would like to know who I'm paying to send out tweets which are alleging that newspaper reports which are based on true and real data are somehow misleading. How do you get to be in charge of a Twitter account from a government department without actually being fired? Because that's what I'd like to see. Thank you very much. I'd like an answer from the Department of Health, who I fund, who you fund, who we all fund, right? They're all living very high on the hog, as we'll be finding out very shortly, these civil servants. And I think we owe them a duty of care to ensure that they do the right thing. They tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, rather than taking data, locking us all up, telling us all that we have to like it or lump it, and then telling us all when we question them that we're doing the wrong thing. Well, no thanks, matey. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
A very good morning to you, Mr. Hitchens. You will no doubt be very buoyed by the news on the front page of the Daily Mirror this morning that we will be allowed, apparently, to have Christmas.
Well, this is very kind of them to let us do that. Next, they'll be letting us wear what we like.
Yes.
Get up in the morning when we like, leave our houses when we like, and indeed live normal lives. I didn't actually realise that these things were in the gift of the government. I thought we had them anyway, that we lived in a country where everything was permitted unless it was specifically prevented. But
yes,
astonishingly, we've turned into a sort of semi-Soviet state in the past few months in which it's all been reversed.
Yes.
And what's far worse to me is that so many people have been willing to put up with this arrangement and have not protested against it or objected to it or even written to their members of parliament to say, stop this or examine it. The thing I still find all the time in the public arguments I have with this is the number of people who believe government claims that strangling society and the economy and cancelling our freedom actually saves lives.
Yes.
There is no evidence, it remains the case, there is no evidence at all of any connection between the zeal with which the government strangles the economy and society and the death rate. There just isn't one.
No, there isn't.
On the contrary, it may well be that the number of deaths, particularly from people failing to get medical treatment or simply dying of loneliness and misery, goes up as a result of this. Certainly the numbers of people unemployed go up. And you mentioned, and we should discuss, the Daily Mail's fantastic piece of good, hard popular journalism on Saturday, which really obviously scared the government.
Yeah.
They've done it again this morning with a terrific analysis of the economic dangers, the loss of jobs which is going on, and awful danger to the national health, which this, of course, presents.
Yes, indeed. I'm hoping, and I may well be overreaching here, that the piece in the Mail on Saturday will actually act as some form of watershed moment, because a lot of people noted that, you know, this perhaps is the first time that a proper newspaper with proper research and proper, clout has actually published a list of figures and statistics, which are official figures, government figures, which show that actually everything that you have been saying all along is true. Everything that we have been saying here at Talk Radio is true, that the hospital bed situation is actually not at all critical. The death rates are entirely the same as they would be in any other year. And in fact, that all of these desperately doomy predictions and gloomy predictions are completely off the scale wrong.
Well, quite. And the other fantastically important thing about this event, which everybody should remark and file, is the fact that the government's response to it was not to admit it, not to issue any kind of statement saying why it was that they disagreed with it or deprecated it, but simply to claim that it was misleading, a claim completely without foundation, and basically the reaction of somebody who would very much have liked to have censored this story if they possibly could. Mm. What I saw in that reaction was the behaviour of a government which does not believe in free speech or a free press.
Yeah.
And it's obviously great that on this occasion it came up against an opponent its own size, which fought back and also came up against a great deal of deserved derision, and it withdrew. But we know, last week, the report on mask wearing from Denmark finally emerged and showed that basically it doesn't make any difference whether you wear a mask or whether you don't. Mm. And this barely appeared in any newspaper at all except my own, but it was taken up by Carl Hennigan of Oxford University, who, together with his colleague Tom Jefferson, posted on The Spectator a very interesting article about it, which he then tried to put on Facebook, and Facebook then said he couldn't put up because it was factually incorrect.
Yeah.
Carl Hennigan is in charge of the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine in Oxford. His stuff is all factual, and it was outrageous. But there's a constant attempt in all kinds of areas particularly by the social media groups, to censor the truth about what's going on. And when the government joins in that, then we really do have a big problem. And I'm going to pursue this and find out where that tweet from the government saying this was misleading originated, who authorised it,
right,
and again, who unauthorised it and cancelled it. They haven't even admitted it. They haven't put up another tweet, as far as I know, saying, we're sorry, this tweet was wrong. They've just removed it.
Yes. Well, I put a tweet up, obviously, before they removed it, in which I asked them this. Please address why this is misleading, referring to the Daily Mail's article. Are the figures for hospital beds wrong? Are the figures for death rates wrong? Are the SAGE predictions not wrong? And are the infection rates collected wrong? And they didn't answer that, of course. I then put another one out. I did another one after they deleted the tweet, saying, please, could you tell me, now that you have deleted this tweet, why have you deleted it? And does that now mean that the Daily Mail story is not, in fact, misleading and is true?
Well, of course, it does mean that, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, it's always very unwise. Ross Clark is a very diligent and thorough journalist. And it was extraordinarily unwise for them to take that attitude. If they'd had a criticism, they should have waited till they're absolutely clear they had it. Because he was operating from exactly the same figures the government's operating from. And there it is. This whole crisis has been, more or less from the start, a statistical crisis rather than an actual one, in which figures have been presented in such a way as to make out that we're suffering from a far more serious outbreak of, let's say it again, of a definitely serious disease. We're suffering from a far more serious outbreak than we actually are. And this has been the case for so long. And the second wave, you could tell for ages. I mean, it was anybody who knew anything about coronavirus said a second wave as such was most unlikely. But the government was determined to have one. And so you could see the statistics being produced and arranged so as to suggest this is true. But Hitchens' second law of politics is that all politically important statistics are fiddled. Mm. And I've never seen a better example of it than that.
No, incredible. Absolutely incredible. And yet here we are once again. We're going to be hearing from Boris Johnson this afternoon, sometime around 3, I believe, about what is likely to happen on December the 2nd. Clearly, the government have kind of folded, it would seem, over the whole idea of Christmas, because they've realised that they can't actually police Christmas, because too many people are now going to just enjoy themselves and have the Christmas that they want to have. But they will still be using these same projections, these same models. And Steve Baker MP was on with Julia Hartley-Brewer this morning saying they've got to change this modelling system, because they were using the same modelling system to then take us back into, you know, tier 2, tier 3, tier 3.5, tier 4.3, you know, all of that nonsense. They won't change.
No, well, nothing fundamental is changing. We're in this, I think, until March and probably April, because the government continues to believe and has believed from the start that it is right and cannot understand that it is wrong. Which again is another reason for the extraordinary outburst on Twitter on Saturday. But the whole attitude, the whole mad surgeon attitude, you've got a verruca, so I've got to cut off your leg,
right,
continues. And there's a wasp nest in your roof, so I have to burn down your house. Right. They continue to do it. And they continue to say, well, I've burnt down your house, so the wasp nest has gone. I've cut off your leg, the verruca's gone. It's a success. And the only thing that we did wrong was we didn't cut your leg off soon enough. We didn't burn your house down soon enough. And people still swallow this garbage. And as long as they continue to swallow this line, that even people who are gradually coming round to understanding they've been conned and been deprived of a huge part of their lives and of their future health and wealth, even people like that still at the end of it say, yes, but we should have locked down earlier. The ideology, the dogma of this, the idea that the government knows what it's doing and has a sensible plan, still got into people's heads. And until that gets out, the government can continue to mess us around like this. People like you and I can object to it, can tell the truth about it. People like Ross Clark can write about it. The Daily Mail can publish it. But as long as a substantial majority of people still swallow this garbage, we're still stuck with it at least until the spring. And then what happens if another virus emerges from Asia, and we have to shut down the country again on the same logic? Unless the logic is defeated, unless we can show this thing was wrong from the start, we're stuck with it at least till the spring, and quite possibly forever.
Well, that is the terrible, terrible dread that we all fear, isn't it? Because when you look around at what's going on out in the real world, it seems as though people have sort of become diffident about it. It's not as if they're believing it necessarily, or they're swallowing everything that's being said to them by the government. But they're kind of working around it, if you like. They're sort of just saying to themselves, well, do you know what? We're just going to do what we want to do regardless. And I think an awful lot of more people will start doing that.
Up to a point. But I think quite a lot of people are still nervous of it. And they are genuinely afraid that they could get into trouble. Also, the government, the police particularly, are becoming incredibly hard on certain things. A group of lockdown sceptics in my hometown of Oxford gather harmlessly in, I'm afraid, regrettably small numbers in the centre of that city, usually on Saturday afternoons. This last Saturday, they were actually approached by the police as if they were running some sort of demonstration. I remember, you possibly do, the most important Western European coup d'etat of our time, the colonel's coup in Greece in the 70s. I remember one of the things which sent a shiver down my spine was one of the things they immediately announced was a ban on gatherings of, I think, more than three people.
Yeah.
That's always been a characteristic to me of dictatorship. And now we have that here. And on a complete, it's a different area, but it's in some way the same thing. I've taken up the cause of Julian Assange because although I don't like him and he doesn't like me, I feel that the attempt to extradite him is basically a kidnap.
Yeah,
and it's a threat to the freedom of the press, and I think many more journalists are joining. There was a small demonstration in favour of Julian Assange in central London last week, and the police descended on it and dispersed them on coronavirus grounds. Mm. But 200 yards away in Leicester Square, there were a group of people listening to a rather good busker, much larger, and the police left them completely alone.
Right.
It's obviously selective, it seems to me, unless Cressida Dick can give me some explanation as to why a group of people listening to a busker are more of a coronavirus threat than a group of people saying free Julian Assange. That's the way I'm going to view it.
Well, indeed. And similarly, why was it that the police seemed to stand by while two members of Extinction Rebellion were able to get close enough to the cenotaph to put a wreath at the very high point of it while walking across some of the other wreaths that were there when they were not supposed to be allowed to do it? Her reasoning, apparently, was that they weren't being offensive. And I didn't realize that that was now an allowance for being able to make some kind of representation.
No, it's extraordinary, isn't it? But these, of course, are the same police, some of whose members took the knee.
Yes.
I think the politicization of the police forces of England and Wales, I won't go into the Scottish question, the politicization of the police forces of England and Wales over the past 40, 50 years is now coming definitely to fruition. People imagine they still have the police force they used to have. It's been completely and utterly transformed from inside. So it continues to look roughly the same. And that it's now something completely different. Now it doesn't even look the same.
No.
Those police officers in this country have flat hats or baseball caps. Of course, they mask their faces under current circumstances, which seems to me to be extremely worrying for a police force. And they neither behave nor walk nor conduct themselves nor speak as the police force of my youth, teens, 20s and 30s did.
No, exactly. And I mean, you retweeted kindly something we're going to talk about later on in the show. A woman who's been in touch with us a couple of times already, Lydia, who runs the stationery shop up in Droitwich in Worcestershire, where West Mercia police decided to visit her. And she filmed it where these two characters, as you would have seen, were standing there sort of reading off a script. Well, we're here to close you down. And she just said, well, I believe that the law is wrong. I believe that, in fact, I'm going to challenge it. So basically, we're not closing down, and they just kind of walked off. And it seemed to be one of the most ludicrous situations I've seen during this whole lockdown.
But this is what the end of freedom means. It means you can't do anything. You can't make your living. You can't do anything without government permission, and often irrationally withdrawn. And this is why I wrote on Sunday that the country increasingly comes to resemble East Germany. People said, oh, don't be ridiculous. You don't have the Stasi or the Berlin Wall. I said, look, East Germany existed as it did because it was brought into being by Soviet tanks. The difference between that country and this is we are slowly and almost voluntarily accepting constraints on our lives and increasingly, I have to say, on our ability to travel abroad as well, which hugely resemble that country. And I noted that the East German Parliament, most people don't realise, is the Volkskammer, the People's Chamber, did actually have a Conservative party in it. And it had a Liberal party in it and a Farmers party. And they were all allowed in it, provided they agreed with everything that the Communist Party did.
Well, I thought that was a great point.
We have a similar arrangement here now.
Yeah, I thought that was a great point, because Keir Starmer, the only thing he really seems to sort of...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suffice to do is to basically agree with everything that Boris Johnson's doing, but telling him that he should have done it earlier.
Well, it's like the Conservative Party conferences were always pretty terrible. Yeah. The only opposition would come from someone who'd stand up and say, I oppose this motion because it doesn't go far enough,
right.
Which is an indication of how democratic that party is.
Right.
And that's pretty much what Starmer said. Well, I oppose what the government's doing because it's not stupid enough.
Mm.
And it's not harmful or damaging enough, particularly to Labour voters.
Yes.
I do wish, I don't know if you come across Paul Embury of Fire Brigade,
yes.
Guy who's written a very interesting book on the betrayal of the working class by Labour, which we serialised in the Mail on Sunday, last Sunday.
Mm.
He, of course, thinks that Labour should speak for the working people of this country. Starmer thinks that Labour should speak for a more or less Euro-communist a metropolitan elite, and
right.
to heck with the workers who can all lose their jobs, as far as he's concerned, as far as I can see. I'm amazed the Labour Party survives in the midst of all this. But I suppose as long as they go on attacking Jeremy Corbyn, nobody will notice what's written.
Well, I think that's the trouble for Labour, is that once they've now lost Scotland because they betrayed the working man and woman up there, without thinking about it, they thought they would have Scotland for the rest of time. They'll never get into power now without all those Scottish seats. And I think it looks more and more likely that they're just not ever going to get back in my lifetime, I don't think.
Well, don't rule it out, because when the economic effects of this shutdown kick in, what will be remembered is that Johnson was in charge, not that Starmer was leader of the opposition. Hardly anyone remembers, for instance, that the Tory party did not oppose the Iraq war in 2003.
Mm.
They never got the backlash from it that Labour got when people realised that they'd been conned. And I fear very much that Labour might benefit electorally from when people realise they've lost their jobs, they've lost their savings, they've lost their pensions, their children have lost their hopes of any kind of career or decent education. When this becomes clear to people in large numbers and they start saying, right, who can we punish for this? They'll punish the government. And Labour will benefit from that. Also, Labour's quite capable of a coalition with the SNP, which doesn't really differ from them in any substantial way on major issues of policy.
No, true. I mean, I find what may happen is that the Tories will somehow manage to dump Boris Johnson once, if indeed Brexit ever does get done, and they'll find a more palatable kind of replacement for him, and somehow they will bring it all back. But I mean, I'm beginning to wonder about that. The more I talk,
the more
I talk to you, Peter, the less likely I think that could be. Because now, for example, when you see Sadiq Khan doing a full 360-degree turn, who now says he's very worried about central London. This is after telling everybody, you know, not to come to work, after telling everybody not to travel on the trains, after telling everybody not to actually go out. He's now worried that the heart of London may be dying.
Well, that's smart of him to notice that. And in fact, London is one of the principal victims of this. It's the same has happened in the United States. And the government of New York City has done immense damage to its own city and people, which it's astonishing there's not more discontent about.
I know. Well, there's a lot of people moving out of New York City and an awful lot of people just leaving the place. And they've just shut the schools now, which is only going to hurt the poorer people who live there, who can't move out and who now have to stop working to look after their kids.
No, I was astonished by that. I thought even the weirdest of the lockdown zealots had begun to understand that closing the schools was a mistake, and I couldn't see it. But of course, even when the schools are open, there are constant attempts to shut them down. Mm. You know, one pupil turns up and tests positive, there's nothing wrong with him, and before you know where you are, the whole school's been sent home.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, the teaching unions still don't really want the schools to be open, and any opportunity, I think, to shut them down comes in handy.
Right. But I mean, I suppose, and I know this was something we talked about last week, but the kind of the poster boy of all of this has to now be the Prime Minister, doesn't it? Sitting marooned in his own home without having any reason to be so marooned, apart from the fact that the rules say he has to be marooned for 14 days, despite the fact that he's had a negative test and there's nothing wrong with him.
Well, he's imprisoned by his own rules, yeah. And I suppose that's only just if he didn't stick to them so much. Though, of course, one sees that they're now being revised.
Yes,
it's a short time. I wonder where that came from.
Right. I mean, that's the trouble. Every single time you get told to follow the rules. I mean, I have conversations daily now with people, and we're all kind of looking at each other, going, "To be honest, I don't actually know what they are anymore on anything."
Well, no, but you do know that that one misstep and you could be in trouble. Mm. And of course, what you also know is that the police can be extraordinarily vigilant on anybody who protests about it.
Well, I'm now being followed, interestingly, by West Mercia Police.
You are?
Yeah.
I hope this is only on Twitter.
As far as I know, only on Twitter. You
don't see strange cars in your driving.
They haven't started tailing me yet, but it gives me a slight feeling of foreboding, actually.
Well, I can readily imagine that. But of course, the thing about the modern world, the internet, is you have got no idea who's following you. But I think that you and I have, because we have a reasonably strong public position, are relatively safe, but ordinary individuals who in any way protest against this or step across the line are terribly vulnerable to arbitrary authority and tyrannical, ruinous fines which can be imposed, in my view, completely illegally, because the Bill of Rights of 1689 absolutely outlaws this kind of thing from happening. But there they are, it's happening, and there's nobody in our court system standing up for the Bill of Rights saying, see, what's happened, by the way, to Simon Dolan's great court case, which was heard in the courts. Now, weeks ago, what's taking them so long to deliver their verdict on whether the government is subject to judicial review? Yeah. Where are the courts in all this?
It's a fairly straightforward decision, I would have thought. I mean, why take so long to do it?
Well, I know. I long for it to come, but maybe the verdict is unpalatable, just as the verdict of the Danish mask study was unpalatable to the authorities. So three major scientific journals refused to publish it. Yet when you read it, it's completely unimpeachable. Why did they refuse to publish it? And certainly not for scientific reasons.
No, certainly not. Peter, I feel we're at the end of the time slot once again, but delightful to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. We shall catch up again next week to see where we are then. We'll be very nearly next week, of course, at the point of lifting this second lockdown. And we may know, and we should know a little bit more about that coming up later on today. We'll bring it to you live, of course, right here on Talk Radio. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, will be addressing the House of Parliament with the new rules and the new plan for what happens in December.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, I was contacted by Lydia's son over the course of the weekend, and he said that they had some footage of the police visiting the shop to try and close them down. I asked him if he had the footage, or could we put it out, could we publish it? We managed to do that on Twitter. So far, it has now been viewed by 160,000 plus people, and in fact, it has caused quite a stir in West Mercia Police. They have now issued a statement about it publicly on Twitter. We've got it here, but let's have a look, if you're watching or just listening, so what happened?
I've been told if you keep failing to abide by the trading standards saying that you need to be closed, there is a risk that you pay by yourself.
I don't get
that
how...
if you continue to fail to obey by the regulations.
Well, we'll shut down completely.
But there is a risk that you can be given away, or you can have your license taken away from you, and you can be shut. This is a substantial risk that you are facing by not adhering to the lockdown guidelines and based on what trading standards have advised you already.
We'll have to look into that.
If you want to look into that,
see,
I guess I can only go on what I've been told myself.
You're not even giving us time to sort out what our rights are here. This is This is a business of 30 years here. And
I'm not disputing that.
We don't feel that you are... that the law is right in this respect, that we are not doing anyone any harm by being open. We are doing no harm. What proof is there that we've harmed anyone?
That you're open, you've been told by the Whitchaven District Council, the health and protection, the coronavirus restrictions in England and before the regulations, that you do not meet the required premises guidelines to remain open during a lockdown.
Yeah, but you haven't told us why the fact that we're selling food
items... That's not up for me to argue. That has come from the the regulatory service. That
yeah,
isn't
and
for
it
me
says
to decide.
That we can challenge it. So we're,
yeah.
that's what
you
we're
can challenge
to
it,
do.
But that's not with us. That'll be with them. This isn't for us to challenge. That'll be for you to take up with them. As far as we're concerned, we've been told by the government that this does not meet the requirements for the shop to be open. So that is what we're here to advise you.
Okay.
You've been in here to advise.
We've got your advice, yeah.
Okay. Take consideration, and I've told you that the risks that could be imposed upon this, if you don't, I'm not going to give the details, so be it.
Well, we've given you our details. I've told you 6 times.
Okay.
You have the details.
I'm not going to stay here and have an argument with you. We just wanted to let you know.
Thanks.
So that's the police force in this country in 2020. We're working because the government have told us this. Really? I don't really think the government's actually told them anything, has it? The council has said to the police that we've issued a closure order for this business and we think that you should go and tell them that we're going to shut you down. And if not only are we going to shut you down, but we're going to remove your licence, mind you, so that you can't actually do any business at all. Here's a statement from the police, which we have now received. It's been put out on Twitter. Following footage circulating on social media of West Mercia police officers enforcing a prohibition notice issued by Wychavon District Council, we have issued a statement. They've also misspelt prohibition, by the way, but never mind that. The statement from Wychavon District Council can be found below. But here's what the police say. Chief Superintendent Paul Moxley says, "We remain hugely sympathetic to the difficult times that business owners, particularly small and independent businesses, are having to endure. None of my officers, and I'm sure no one in Wychavon District Council, joined our chosen professions anticipating that we would have to enforce government rules such as this. However, it is the role of both our organisations to ensure that the current legislation is complied with to reduce the opportunities for COVID-19 to spread. Throughout the country's response to the pandemic, West Mercia's police approach has always been to engage with individuals and businesses first and foremost to negate the need for significant intervention wherever possible." What is significant intervention and what does it mean? "This shop has already been advised previously by Wychavon District Council that they should not be open within the current restrictions, and the shop had already been issued with a prohibition notice. My understanding of that is that that was before they started to sell essential goods. Clearly, at the time of the visit, that notice was being breached. Our officers were therefore simply visiting the premises to advise and will report their findings to Wychavon District Council. We understand the restrictions can be challenging and we know this business is well loved in Droitwich, but the government legislation is in place to minimise the spread of COVID-19 and to keep us all safe. We all have a critical part to play in that," issued by the West Mercia Police Corporate Communications Unit. Now, I'm not sure whether you would agree with me on this one, but I don't think the police there have offered any reason why one shop should be shut while another one remains open. Because if it's dangerous to walk around inside Grace Cards and Books in Droitwich, surely it must also be dangerous to walk around outside it in the corridor of the shopping centre, or indeed inside WH Smith's, where it could also be dangerous. But it's all right to walk around in WH Smith's because apparently it's not dangerous in there. I don't understand. Let us talk now, though, to Lydia Walker-Cox, co-owner of Grace Cards and Books. Lydia, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Yeah, great. Lovely to speak to you.
Lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much to your son for giving us that video at the weekend. It took off like wildfire.
Yeah, it did.
Pleased to see that we've now managed to at least get some kind of reaction out of both the council and West Mercia Police. But, I mean, they're not really giving any ground here, are they?
No, it doesn't sound like it. But yeah, I mean, we're standing not just for ourselves, but we're standing for all small businesses out there. This is a complete injustice to all small businesses that can't operate while the larger businesses that are selling the same things are allowed to operate.
That's black and white. Very, very unfair. And as far as I'm aware, and you can correct me if I'm not right here, but when you were issued initially with the closure order, that was before you had the essential items to sale, right?
No, the closure order came after we had the essential items in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had an initial visit from the police on the first day of the second lockdown, telling us to close.
Right.
Now, at that stage, we didn't have confectionery and drinks. So we closed the shop and then we reopened with drinks and confectionery.
Right.
And then the council visited us and served us with this notice.
Right. So they're kind of picking on you a bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it feels like it. I mean, We sell a decent selection of sugar craft products,
yeah,
which we feel are essential, especially this time of year with people making Christmas cakes and we're selling icing, marzipan. That's all edible anyway. So we've sold that for 30
right.
years.
Right.
So yeah, and I don't know whether you've read the report that there's some lockdown changes being made to people being allowed to sell Christmas trees.
Yes, I have seen that.
I'm glad for those people. I wouldn't want any businesses to close, but you know, we're alongside those in the fact that we're selling Christmas sugar craft.
Yeah, right. So it's actually seasonal goods that you're selling.
Absolutely.
Mm. And yeah. It's interesting as well when you watch that video that right near the end, a customer actually walks into the shop.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. We've had lots of support from our customers. Most of them are saying, so glad you're open. It's great. I served a customer this morning, a lovely lady, and she said that at the beginning of this second lockdown, when we had to be closed, she came down into the town to buy a card from our shop, which she couldn't do because we were closed, and she wanted to use the dry cleaning shop. She couldn't use that either because they've been forced to close.
Really?
So
I thought because dry cleaners where I am are still open.
Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, she tried to use the shop. So she ended up going to a supermarket to do both of those things.
Right.
So this is what people are doing. They're going to the big boys to buy their stuff instead of the small businesses.
Mm.
So, yeah, it does feel like it's a purposeful thing trying to get rid of small businesses. The other thing is my daughter visited our local garden centre, which it's, again, we've got nothing against them as a business. We want all businesses to be open. But it does rankle a lot with small businesses when these garden centres are allowed to be open and they sell everything that we're selling. And, you know, she went up there yesterday and the queue was just massive.
Right.
All the way down the car park, people trying to get in. This was at the beginning of the day when they were trying to open, you know.
Right.
And they sell gifts, they sell cards up there. You know, you don't go to a garden centre for anything except a trip or a jolly. You don't go up there for essential.
No.
Essential stuff, do you?
No, but that's why the essential thing is absolute nonsense. I've got a tweet here from somebody called Isolation DJ. It says, I was able to buy these really essential light-up DJ letters from Marks & Spencer's on Kensington High Street. You couldn't make it up. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that you can go and buy, which is in nobody's mind essential in any way, shape or form. But they claim in this statement, the police, that you are registered as a card and gift shop. But that doesn't matter, really, does it?
Yeah, you're registered. Can I point something out, Mike? If you look up W.H. Smith's Droitwich,
yeah,
they are there's a title underneath W.H. Smith's Droitwich that says stationers. They're not even called a news agent.
Right.
If you look them up.
Yeah. So they're actually calling themselves the same as you, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, and anyway, just because in your title you don't have everything listed in your title of what you're selling doesn't mean to say that you're not selling that product or those essential items.
No, exactly right. And also this final paragraph where it says, you know, we understand the restrictions can be challenging, but then they say the legislation is in place to minimise the spread of COVID-19 and to keep us all safe. Well, as I said, you know, how is it any more dangerous to walk around your shop than it is to walk outside in the corridor of the shopping centre?
Yeah, and the other point is, Mike, businesses like ours, we were told to spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds making our shops COVID secure.
Yeah.
We were told we've got to have it, you know, so we did all that. We were good, honest, you know, we kitted our shops out
right.
in all the way that the government wanted us to, et cetera, et cetera. And then they pull the rug out from under our feet and tell us we've got to be shut.
Mm. Well, we can very clearly see in the video. You can very clearly see in the video that you've put those Perspex screens up, so you're very well protected from infecting anybody, if that was what they were worried about.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as the visit was concerned, I mean, when they said to you, you could lose your licence, I mean, they don't have the right to even suggest that, do they?
No, I don't think they do. And we've had our centre manager into our shop this morning, and he has reassured us that our landlord is very happy about us being open based on what we're selling, and that we are selling essential, you know, the things that we're selling are okay with our lease. So they're very happy about it, and they're very happy because we're going to be paying our rent at the end of the day.
Well, exactly. And if everybody's, I mean, it's a typical kind of, you know, Jobsworth type attitude to mess about with something that doesn't need messing about with, it seems to me. You know, the customers are happy to shop there. You're very happy to make sure that the customers are in small enough numbers so that there's no hazard at all for anybody. Yeah. The landlord's happy. You know, you guys are happy. You know, you're paying your taxes. You're paying all of the attentions to health that you're meant to do. It's a nonsense.
Yeah, and we're not taking that government grant that they're offering us, so that's their money, more money in their pocket.
Yes, well, this is the statement that I've got from Wychhaven Council, who say that they have distributed more than 32 million to businesses during the first lockdown, and so far 600,000 to businesses forced to close during the current one, and they say that you should apply for a grant from them. But I think you said to me earlier that it wouldn't cover much, would it?
It doesn't even cover the rent.
Right.
No, it doesn't.
So what are they? What's the maximum you could get?
Well, I think it's like $2,500 or something. $2,500. It doesn't even cover our rent.
Right.
And the other thing is that we've got thousands of pounds worth of Christmas stock sat there.
Yeah.
You know, we were all ready for Christmas.
Yeah.
So we've got to sell that stuff, else it's just money on the shelf that's being wasted.
Well, exactly. And I mean, in the end, it may well be that after this afternoon, Boris Johnson's going to say anyway that come December the 2nd, that these particular lockdown rules won't apply anyway. You know?
Crazy.
It really is bonkers. But, did you manage to talk to a lawyer?
Well, yeah, we've taken some legal advice and it's been very helpful. We've got more things in the pipeline because we feel so strongly about this, Mike, that not just for ourselves, just for businesses up and down the country as a whole, small businesses that are, you know, it's tough anyway.
Right.
Normally speaking, it's tough. Never mind about this coming along. And we speak on behalf of the injustice that's happening to smaller businesses. We're going to keep going.
I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm sure all of our listeners and viewers do as well. So just keep in touch with us. Let us know what's going on. And if they try and get heavy, you know, we may have to take some other action. I don't know what it will be, but we'll see. What we maybe come and do a show from your shop or something. They'll have to open it up for that.
Yeah.
Good. All right, Lydia. Well, listen, well done. And thank you so much for talking to us once more. Lydia Walker-Cox there from Grace Cards and Books. Isn't it ridiculous, right? Absolutely, utterly ridiculous. We're getting loads of tweets coming in saying that basically the council have got this wrong, because they have got it wrong. You know, if they're allowing WH Smiths to remain open on the grounds that they sell essential items, well, so does Grace Cards and Books. And it's a ridiculous and small matter that they're registered as a card and gift shop, because as is the stationery business, WH Smith say they did the same thing. So I'm afraid Wychhaven District Council have got this one wrong. Their statement says this: "We absolutely understand the challenges all businesses are currently facing and will continue to face. We have supported them throughout this pandemic and will continue to do so. We distributed more than £32 million to businesses during the first lockdown and have so far paid out more than £600,000 to businesses forced to close during the current lockdown, with more applications to process. We're also making £1.3 million available to support businesses that are affected by the restrictions but do not qualify for the main support scheme." Well, there you go, already saying that the main support scheme isn't really good enough. And listening to Lydia there, she says all she would be getting is not enough money to even cover the rent. "Both grants, they say, are available for businesses to apply for from our website, and we would urge Grace Card and Books to do so if they haven't already." Well, they haven't, because they don't want the money. But they also say the money would not be sufficient for them to be able to be compensated for no business. "The government set out by law the types of businesses that had to close from the 5th of November in order to halt the spread of the virus, reduce the pressure on our NHS and save lives." Not that old chestnut. "Grace Card and Books is registered as a card and gift shop, and that is one of the business types that have to close by law." I mean, we're actually closing places where you can buy a birthday card, right? Do you understand how ridiculous that sounds? "They were advised of this the day before the notice was issued and told they could continue to trade by delivery or click and collect." Oh, that's great, because that's what I really want to do when I'm out and about, thinking, oh, I should buy a Christmas card for somebody or a birthday card for somebody. What I'll do is I'll go home and I'll go on the internet and I'll order it, and then I'll go and pick it up. Nobody does that. They chose to remain open, and so a prohibition notice was issued on Thursday, 19th November, under the Health Protection Brackets Coronavirus Restrictions Brackets England Number 4 Regulations 2020. It is important everyone follows the rules, either as businesses or individuals, and plays their part in helping reduce the spread of the virus. Well, why don't you shut the whole shopping centre then? The vast majority of businesses are voluntarily complying with the law, and we thank them for that. Well, I'm sure they're very grateful that you've shut them down so they can't make any money just before Christmas, so they can't actually even afford to have Christmas. We understand why business owners and the public get frustrated and confused when they see other types of businesses being allowed to continue trading or selling items that are deemed non-essential. Really? You understand it, do you? That's good. The government made the decision on which type of businesses would and would not be allowed to trade and what they would be allowed to sell. We can only enforce the regulations. So, in other words, you're just going to follow the orders. Marvellous, isn't it? Welcome to Britain 2020. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Julie, though, who's in Banbury. Hi, Julie.
Hiya.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm a small shopkeeper, so I'm not doing so well, really.
Are you open or closed?
Oh, I'm closed.
Oh, God. What sort of shop is it?
It's a ladies' accessory gift shop.
Okay.
Doesn't sell any of the required goods to actually allow me to open my doors.
No, you couldn't get some Christmas gear in there, could you?
We could have. We're not stupid. We thought we could buy a load of chocolate in and sell it, but we thought it really wasn't going to be socially acceptable for us to do that.
Right.
Because it's obviously just getting round it.
Sure. And presumably you closed in the first lockdown, did you?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, we have basically had no income for a year. And because we opened in March last year, we have not had any government support.
Oh, no.
We've had no wages, basically, for the entire year.
So how many weeks have you had to close this year so far?
Well, we obviously have had the two big shutdowns, but we also found trade was so poor that we were only opening 2 days a week anyway.
Oh, God.
Because it was so few people were actually coming out and about.
Right. And are you in a sort of busy street or tucked away or what?
No, we're in town centre.
Right. And have you had any kind of compensation? Nothing at all?
We did receive, as many small businesses received, a 10,000 grant, which was supposed to cover the 3 weeks at the beginning.
Right.
And nothing since.
No. So have you had to pay rent and everything?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
How do you manage it? I mean, I take my hat off to people like you, Julie, because, I mean, a friend of mine, you know, runs nightclubs in Scotland, and he's on the show quite a bit, and he's had no income whatsoever since March. I don't know how they do it.
Well, I had a certain amount of money put by for my old age.
Yeah.
And I no longer have that money put by for my old age.
Goodness me. And when do you think you'll be able to make any money?
I doubt, to be honest, this shop will ever make any money now. I think we've been put to our knees and, you know, we might be able to trade again next year at some point, but it's on the edge.
Right. And it's a family business, presumably.
It's just me and my business partner, two ladies of a certain age.
Yeah, goodness gracious. It's awful, isn't it? So what point will you kind of make a decision about just pulling the plug?
Well, what I would like the government to explain is why Marks & Spencer's, Aldi, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Smith's, Hotel Chocolat, why they can all open when there are, you know, a lot of their products are similar to mine.
Right.
And why a little shop run by two little old ladies, basically, can't.
Where you can presumably police the numbers coming in and out, and so one at a time, two at a time, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've done all the screens and everything that everybody else has done, and we have the hand sanitising station.
Right.
And, you know, I can absolutely pretty much guarantee you somebody coming in our shop is much less likely to mix with lots of people while they're doing so. And are in no danger. I personally, myself, has had COVID.
Right.
And I mean,
none of this makes any sense, though, Julie. That's the trouble. And it's affecting people, ordinary, decent people like you. It's a disgrace, in my view.
Yeah, I think it's a disgrace. And I am flabbergasted that a government could do this to the people of this country. And nobody realises that they think this year's been bad. Wait till next year.
I know.
All the shops and lots of even big businesses are going to fold.
Yeah.
The disease is a lot less dangerous than this cure, as you are always saying.
Yes, it's very true. Well, Julie, listen, I wish you all the best, and hopefully there'll be some good news later today, perhaps, about how you can open up. But as you say, you may never be able to make any money because of the way things are. What a terrible story. Julie speaks for an awful lot of people, I'm sure, from Banbury up there in Oxfordshire, because that is what these ridiculous rules are doing. And when you go back to the beginning of this show, which we talked about, you know, the death rates, the occupancy of people in ICU units, in beds, in hospitals up and down the country, the predictions of doom, gloom, death, despondency, all wrong, all completely and utterly fudged. This is the result of what those data show. And it's wrong in all sorts of ways.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Quite upsetting when you listen to stories like Julie's, isn't it? I mean, it really is quite disgraceful what is going on up and down the country and how people are being made to suffer. Somebody like her, who's having to spend all of her own savings in order just to stay afloat personally, because she's looked after herself all of her life and because she's been careful with her money. And yet now, thanks to this government, for no apparent reason, they've basically just crushed her business. They might as well have set fire to it, as Peter Hitchens said. They might as well have just gone in there with a blowtorch and completely ruined everything and smashed all the glass and just left it, because the effect is the same. Absolutely shocking state of affairs. Let's talk, though, to Monica Price, nutritionist. We haven't spoken for some time because an interesting story this morning has emerged about vegans. You know, vegans are always going on about how healthy they are, you know, how brilliantly fit they are and how much longer they're going to live. Well, it turns out, actually, a vegan diet weakens your bones and you might end up breaking them much more easily than those of us who don't forgo meat. Let's find out from Monica what it's all about. Hi, Monica.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you very much
for
asking.
Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for having
Not
me
at
on.
All. Now, I meet more and more people, it's probably just because I'm so trendy, who say, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, I've gone vegan for a couple of days of the week, you know, and you go, yeah. All right, good luck to you then. You won't be joining me for dinner. But, I mean, it turns out now that vegans aren't as healthy as they think they are.
Yeah, this latest study, Mike, is quite shocking, actually. Mm. I mean, they did a study with 55,000 people, so it's a large study, and it was looking at the effects, obviously, on meat and what it does to the body, and also the fact if you were a vegan or a vegetarian, what the effects were on your body. And obviously, as you say, this study came out to say that if you were a vegan, you were 43% more likely to have broken bones or suffer from something like osteoarthritis or, you know, rheumatic arthritis. So this was quite alarming. And I think, you know, more and more people have turned vegan, Mike. There's no doubt about it. But what you have to remember is if you suddenly decide to go vegan, it's completely different if you were vegetarian. Because as a vegetarian, you will still have some animal byproducts. So eggs, for example.
Yes.
So dairy will get into your diet. Whereas when you become a vegan, of course, everything goes and all animal products and byproducts will just go. And that's the danger, because people don't understand that. So if you are a vegan or you're thinking about becoming a vegan, it's really important that you think about how you're going to get your calcium and your protein and of course your vitamins. Vitamin B12 is a crucial vitamin for vegans, because it's only made it's not something our body can make, so we have to get it from our food. And of course B12 is in meat, so and meat products. So if you're a vegan and you're not having B12, then you need to think about having a supplement or look for something what we call fortified foods.
Yes.
So it's a real risk here, Mike. It's a really good study, actually.
It is good, isn't it? Because they also say that by general sort of consensus, vegans tend to be much thinner as well. And it might have something to do with that, because when they fall, and I presume this means if they're older or if they're falling off their bikes or something, they're more likely to actually break something.
Yeah, do you know, that's very interesting, actually, Mike, because I think age would come into this. Mm. I think if you were a young vegan and you were exercising really well, and if you're a vegan, you know, you'll be eating lots of plant-based foods, so you should be very healthy. But I think as you become older, then perhaps you're not sticking to the foods that perhaps you should be eating, and you're going to be lacking in vitamins. You know, often people don't have, the protein. So, you know, they tend to just have jacket potatoes or lots of fruit and lots of vegetables, which is great, but you need all the other food groups. So you need to think about where you're getting your calcium. So you need to think about things like soy milk, for example, or almond milk. But you have to decide that, you know, you have to make a conscious effort. You can't just say, well, I'm not going to have those in my diet, because it's like anything, any diet. Once you start excluding things from your diet, then you're going to be lacking in those vital nutrients and minerals.
Right. Yeah. So it's quite tough then, isn't it, for people? I mean, it sounds as though you'd be better off being a vegan a couple of days a week, like some people are, rather than every single day.
Yeah, I think being a vegan is a big thing. You know, it's I've obviously worked with lots of vegans. You know, I've got vegans that are friends that are vegans, really? And it's a real you know, not a job I'd say, but you know, they have to really think about their food. You know, we can't go out, of course, at the moment, but you know, when they do go out, they'll be more prone to go to vegan restaurants, etc. And you know, these are few and far between at the moment. So, but veganism is on the increase. You know, we've got currently over 600,000 people in the UK that are vegan, so it's on the increase. But lots of doctors and professional and people in the profession like myself have said, you know, try it. You know, it's a radical change in your diet. So if you're thinking about it, it might be better, as you say, just do it for perhaps 1 or 2 days, see how you get on with it, because that's the other thing, Mike. Not everybody gets on with eating just plant-based foods, so it's everybody's different, and all of our DNAs are different. So you've got to find something that works for you. And whilst you might think that you want to become vegan, it's not for everybody. You know, I've seen cases where, you know, people have tried to go vegan and they've been totally exhausted, you know, because they haven't really got to grips with what they should be eating. But it's possible, you know, and obviously everybody has a choice now. But if you are going to do it, you've got to really research, do your research, find out where you're going to get, as I say, particularly your calcium, because of course we need that for our bones, and our protein. And it's all doable, but you know, you've just got to eat certain foods that, you know, other people who are meat eaters obviously wouldn't grab.
No, because I mean, one of the problems for people that I know who are vegetarians is if they are going to a restaurant, they're never quite sure whether it's a meat restaurant, if it is a meat restaurant as well, whether their cooking facilities are completely separate for vegetarian food, or whether they're just using the same kind of stuff, you know. Similarly, if you're a vegan, I presume you'd be even more concerned, because McDonald's have announced, haven't they, that they're going to be doing some plant-based menu, which imagine if you're a vegan, you'd be going, well, where are they cooking that?
Well, you see, this is the thing. I mean, vegan, again, it's different. Vegetarian, you might not be so worried about, you know, the gravies and the mixes and the sauces. But as a vegan, you would be. You would be very concerned about how and where that sauce is being made. Is it being made in the same, you know, places as where you would make, you say, rich gravy with meat-based and meat-based gravy. So all these things come into play when you're a vegan. So it'd be really interesting. You know, they're going to have a separate section. I mean, but it's interesting, though, Mike, that, you know, the good old McDonald's have jumped on that bandwagon and realised that people, you know, consumers have opted for more plant-based foods. But it's when you're a real vegan, a true vegan, you know, the whole reason you're vegan is because you don't want to eat meat products. But, you know, you've obviously got an environmental issue as well. You know, it's you're worried about the climate. They've usually got some environmental issues as well that they're very concerned about. And, you know, and it's a whole lifestyle. So I don't know. It's going to be one of those. But it's really important, especially at this time of the year, that you're getting the nutrients in your body.
Well, it's certainly giving me some ammunition for the next time some vegan comes up and goes, but I'm so much more healthy than you are, so shut up or else I'll shove you over. You might break something. Monica, thanks very much indeed. Monica Price, nutritionist there, with the news that if you eat a vegan diet only, it might be bad for your bones. You might be at risk of breaking something because apparently your balance is not as good as it ought to be inside of your diet.
Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.